You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
So first up, we have Owen Gill. So this, I was lucky enough to be given a copy of Owen's book about, it's called Turning Point Auckland, and it's about the future of Auckland and design, development, and kind of urban issues, and how Owen Gill believes that we should proceed forward in this area as to both sustain our population as well as sustain and meet the needs of future populations and future generations. This first episode that we have is a shortish one, and we discuss kind of the introductions to the book, himself, and who he is, why we should kind of listen to what he has to specifically say on this issue, as well as discussing a few things that I initially found about his book, as well as what he would say his book is. Anyway, here is him introducing himself and introducing the book.
My name is Owen Gill. I live in the inner western suburbs of Auckland. I'm basically a policy guy. I do numbers and ideas, put them together. That's what policy is. And I've got a particular interest in the long-term future of Auckland and whether or not we can get better results for people.
So you've just released a book called Turning Point Auckland.
Yep.
How would you describe this book?
It's a handbook for the future, really. Auckland's coming up for 2 million people. Not many people realise it. By around about 2025, at the current growth rate, it'll be 2 million people. It was around about 1.7 million people at the end of 2018, according to the Stats New Zealand estimate. And what I've tried to do is figure out if we're going to get to 2 million people, what are the big things we need to do?
Right, so what's your background in? Has it always been in policy?
Yeah, I'm a policy guy, but I've done a few things. I've driven a milk truck and I've looked after a big nursery full of roses. I've tried quite a few different things. I've worked in politics directly. I worked for the Right Honourable Helen Clark for a wee while. I worked for a top politician in Australia for a while as well. And I've done some regulation of financial markets and things.
The book focuses on Auckland's development. Is there any reason that you chose to specifically look at Auckland as a strongly independent entity rather than the country as a whole?
Yeah, I did. The reason for that, Oscar, is that Auckland is very different to the rest of New Zealand. There's this wonderful thing called Zipf's Law, spelled Z-I-P-F, after a guy named George Zipf. And he studied cities and urban forms across the world for quite a while. And he discovered that a very common pattern that applies in Canada, UK, Australia, the US even, is that countries typically have one large or two large urban centres, so think of Sydney and Melbourne, at around about 5 million people each. And then they typically have a second city, which is half the size of the biggest one, and then a third city, which is the third of the size of the biggest one. So Sydney and Melbourne at 5 million, Brisbane at 2.5 million, and Perth at about 1.3, 1.4 million. That's Zipf's Law. It doesn't apply in New Zealand. It's only two countries in the OECD where there are no second large urban centres, New Zealand and France. So Paris is the only big city in France. Auckland's the only big city in New Zealand. So, Auckland is very different to the rest of New Zealand, and it's worthy of studying as a kind of exceptional thing.
How did Auckland become the one big city and big centre?
It's a hard thing to figure out, because George Zipf, if he was here, would say, you people should have built yourself a second city. It's partly historic. Auckland was it quickly became New Zealand's biggest commercial trading area, and that was because after the treaty, the flow of commerce was south from Northland, which had been the centre of New Zealand, and period, 1870s, that period, Auckland grew quite quickly. It had two harbours, got two navigable harbours, one in the east, one in the west. That was quite an advantage. Closest location to Australia, which of course, in the colonial period is very important. Good climate. So those kind of things, for reasons that we don't really understand, made Auckland the place.
This is a bit of a challenge, this next one. In either a minute or 30 words, you can have your choice. What do you think Auckland needs?
I'll do the minute. It sounds a bit longer. It needs three things. It needs Aucklanders to get inspired about this city. It's a great place. It's very diverse. It has low levels of crime and corruption. Some of the diseases that have hit the big US and Australian cities, we don't have them. Auckland's got a lot of potential. That's the first thing. Aucklanders have got to get engaged. Second thing, we've got to get a big heap of capital. And I say in the book, we need probably around about $40 billion over the next decade, because we've got to build things quickly and build them high quality. Third thing, we've got to improve the quality of decision making. So when the Super City was set up in 2010, some big advances, but we are still making too many decisions that are too short term and focused on the immediate.
Do you think that we are right now at a turning point, hence the name of the book, or do you think that we're actually partway down one of the paths that you describe in your book?
I hope we're still at the turning point, Oscar. So for people who haven't read the book, I say in the book that Auckland could become, you know, closer to a small LA, which is, you know, choked by its own traffic, very high levels of inequality, high levels of crime and corruption. That's one route. Another one is Auckland could become a bit more like Adelaide, with the capital of the state of South Australia. Adelaide was once a great city, but it's lost its way, very low population growth. It's not generating enough jobs, so it's a city that's kind of looking for a purpose in life. It's a second possibility. The third possibility has become more like Melbourne. Very high quality investment, very good decision making, good quality architecture and public spaces. It's still got some drawbacks, Melbourne. House prices are too high and a couple of other things, but Melbourne is a pretty good model. I hope we're still at that turning point and that we could go obviously closer to the Melbourne than to Adelaide or LA, but that turning point is now, right? We've got 2 or 3 years to do these changes.
So in the book, you say that you don't endeavour to cover every aspect of Auckland, so many critical issues, including partnership with Māori, the role of the Treaty of Waitangi, gender equality and the status of children, as well as the effects of climate change and Auckland's waning economic productivity, have been omitted or referred to only in passing. Obviously, it's a big thing to discuss how a city develops, but why did you choose to omit or only refer to these things in passing?
I would love to have written a much bigger book. The book's 130 pages. It's designed to be written in about 140 minutes. Mm. So it's designed for a person to be able to read it in just over 2 hours. I made the decision to omit them really out of necessity. I wrote this book as a personal project. I did it in 8 months and I funded it as well. If I'd have had another year or so and a lot more firepower and expertise, I would have certainly done inequality, natural environment, and probably relationship with Māori. I think those three things would have been worth going into in more detail.
Why did the issues that did make it into the book make it in ahead of these ones?
I think, and many people disagree with me about this, and that's good. Disagreement's a good thing because it helps you get to a solution a lot quicker. I was looking for the things which, if you change them, everything else would improve. So it doesn't matter what we think the immediate and secondary effects of climate change are. If we don't have enough capital, we can't deal with them. It doesn't really matter what we think is, you know, the level of inequality we've got. Unless we can grow the economy and share it better, we don't get anywhere to improve that. So I was looking for the things which, if you improve them, everything else would improve.
I mean, obviously the restrictions of the length of the book and the accessibility of the book as well, which you make clear in the introduction, do obviously constrict what you can write. But do you think that we are at a point where we can no longer look at these issues in isolation? As you say, they all have interconnected relationships, i.e. if you can't do this, if you can't raise enough capital, how can we continue to look at these things in a holistic manner if you think that we need to look at these things in a holistic manner?
Oh, we do. You know, I think Le Corbusier, famous architect, said that a city is basically a heap of information in, information out. So it is very difficult to separate these things. If you look at decision making in Auckland, say over the last 30 or 40 years, it's probably one of the causes of inequality. In other words, who got to make decisions and who didn't has had some impact on that. So it's very difficult to separate them, I agree. You know, the truth is my book is 130 pages. As I say, it's designed to be written in just over 2 hours. You could really write a 500-page book on the future of Auckland.
Yeah, I'm sure you could write thousands and thousands of pages. I'm sure people have or attempted to.
Irirangi Pō, Radio Bosom.
The Wire.
Yes, that was author of Turning Point Auckland, Owen Gill, talking to me about the development of Auckland and his book and suggestions. If people are still interested, next week hopefully we'll be talking about the role of council and restructuring council. Then we've got a section as well about financing and all the kind of technicalities of how we can make Auckland better. We also have a thing about the role of Aucklanders in making Auckland better, and then we've got a miscellaneous section. So if people want to text in or say which one of those they seem to prefer or want to hear most, we can play those. And the full interview, which took a course over an hour. It will be available online eventually, either at the end of the series or partway through.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.